Hey everybody, and welcome to episode number 37 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm your host, Billy, and with me as always is the other host, Dave.
Hey guys, it's the other host, Dave.
Yeah, it's funny, I say with me always, but there are weeks you're not here, and then it's somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, with me always is Nick. With me almost always Nick. Is Dave.
Yeah. So I'm here this week. I've missed I think three in the year.
Yeah, three or four. I'm not counting. Maybe three and then Nick was on once with you. Yeah, I'm not counting.
That's true.
I'm not counting as I write this down in my book.
Check marks.
So before we talk about new comics, Dave, I want to talk about what I consider the biggest piece of comic book news of, if not the week, if not, like, more than the week, biggest news of the month. Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are coming back to the DC Universe, and it's not new 52 versions of them.
Right. We're talking about Bwahahaha Justice League versions, or, Giffen DeMatteis versions. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah, and not only are they coming back, but they're coming back in a book written by Giffen and DeMatteis, Justice League 3000.
Right, which has been a pretty interesting read. I feel like their first storyline has kind of like their origin has really been stretched out. You know, it provides some, it's an interesting story. I enjoy it.
So here's a crazy thing that they announced as part of this announcement that Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are coming back, is that Justice League 3000 does not take place in the future of Earth Zero, the new 52 Earth, but rather another Earth, almost a pre-Flashpoint Earth, because Ted was never shot in the head on the Justice League 3000 Earth.
Yes. You see a lot of news sites referring to this as the like the pre New 52 Booster and Beetle coming back, which is, I guess, technically true, but semi misleading. It's
right.
Not like, you know, picking up from where we left off of, you know, in Booster Gold series from just pre the New 52,
right.
But it's a Giffen DeMatteis kind of universe. So it should be interesting. So it kind of, when they were talking to Newsarama, they said this is where the we left off from these characters is where we're picking up with these characters.
That's fantastic.
So I'm guessing like maybe Guy Gardner has a bowl cut in this universe, though. You know, I'm guessing that the Elongated Man, I'm guessing he's still alive, and so is his wife.
Yeah.
And Jean Loring never killed him.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that, so Booster and Ted, they're going to be revived from like some cryogenic chamber in the future. And I really hope that they find Ralph and Sue in like the chamber next to them.
Yeah, that would be great. It's kind of like, look, this is what, you know, everybody's been clamoring for. We're kind of giving this to you, you know, like we're giving you like. I always find it funny when you hear people talk about how Dan DiDio hates. Like certain characters, or hates this character, or hates the DC hates DC Comics, and he can tell he doesn't, but I think he's, you know, kind of governed by sales numbers, and so, you know, I'd be interesting how much of a boost this gives that series.
Yeah, I'd like to say it's going to give it a big boost, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it actually will, because I love Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. You do too, but these are cult characters, you know. Booster Gold's series have never been best-selling series. Same with Blue Beetle.
Right.
And
except for the couple issues that Geoff Johns writes.
And Giffen, you know, Giffen DeMatteis Justice League was top of the charts in the late 80s when it debuted. But, you know, the formerly known as the Justice League series, which I completely loved, I sometimes felt like I was the only one buying them in my comic book store.
Yeah, you know, I think that initial run was, like, you know, super huge. And then, you know, when you got the breakdowns after that, I feel like after that breakdown storyline, like, it kind of, you know, it kind of fell apart. There was a lot of Justice League crossovers. You know, it lost the sitcomness of the story. And I think kind of that's where, like, you know, Giffen left, if I'm not wrong. And I think Gerard Jones started picking up some stuff. And then, you know, which eventually, you know, paved way for Dan Jurgens to come along and, you know, do his version and, you know, kill off Superman and, you know, all that stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I have not read Justice League 3000 yet, but this makes me excited to not only read issue 12, which comes out in December, but to also read the previous issues too.
Yeah, they're pretty decent issues. They're way better read altogether. But I do feel like they're kind of stretched out a bit too long, and I'm wondering if they stretched it out this long just to wait till, like, Multiversity came out to show that this was an alternate universe.
Oh, that's a good point.
I don't know, but it should be interesting. I'm interested to see the pacing of the stories and that now that this storyline has come to an end.
Yeah. So it sounds like both of us are excited for this.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So let's move on and talk about new comics coming out this week, which is the week of Wednesday, September 17th.
Right. Speaking of Multiversity, Multiversity Society of Superheroes, Conquerors of the Counterworld number 1 is coming out, written by Grant Morrison and with art by Chris Sprouse.
Now, I see that it has 5 different covers. None of them are in 3D. What's up with that?
Come on, Grant Morrison, you've done 3D covers before.
And actually, you can get a Grant Morrison drawn variant cover for this issue. It looks like it's a rare one, since it's going to be selling for about $100.
Wow, yeah. Jeez. No thanks. I mean, he's an okay artist, like, as far as, like, you know.
Right.
But geez.
I have to say, the regular Chris Sprouse cover looks awesome.
Right, yeah, this is a pulp universe and very magic-based. You see Abin Sur is the Green Lantern here, but he looks very demon-like.
Yeah.
You have Dr. Fate looking a bit more like Doc Savage, and you have a Lady Blackhawk here. Mm-hmm. And that guy in the front looks...
I mean, I guess the Atom?
Yeah, it looks like the Al Pratt Golden Age Atom.
Right.
The really cool thing, I think, about this is if you look back in... I think it's either the last issue or the penultimate issue of 52.
Okay.
You see all these worlds that he's bringing... he's doing stories on in that issue as, like, flashes.
Oh, really? Even so, this one?
Yeah. Not in this one, actually. This he shows in Final Crisis.
Oh, right.
There's a world. You see him get out of the car. You see Doc Fate, and I think it's a Lady Blackhawk.
I vaguely remember that.
So all this stuff has been somewhat in the works since 52. The Shazam world, the Nazi freedom fighters world, where Superman is involved with that, like, that all dated back to the 52. So I'm very interested in how many times he was like, okay, I'm going to do Final Crisis And then we're going to get multiversity. And how much that was pushed back due to Batman, due to like other schedules and stuff like that. But these ideas were out there, you know, for a while. I mean, 52 was, almost a decade ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely, because it came out right after Infinite Crisis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember him talking about multiversity, before the new 52 even launched.
Right. So, I mean, it's cool that they are now bringing it into the new 52 and kind of using it as a roadmap, literally, for the DC Universe. Or multiverse, should I say.
Right. And then we've got Justice League Future's End, number one, coming out, which is written by Jeff Lemire and is a continuation from Justice League United Future's End from last week.
Right, yeah. So this should be pretty interesting.
And I'd just like to say there was no Justice League Canada cover for that Justice League Future's End issue.
Oh.
Went to the store ready to buy it, and let me tell you, that cost my local comic book store about $11 in sales, because I was going to buy, if they had that in a 3D cover, I would have bought it. And I was like, oh, the Scott Snyder Batman issue is probably going to be good. So I picked that up, the 3D cover of that as well. And then I grabbed Grant Morrison's Annihilator. And then when I saw that they actually didn't have the Justice League United Canada cover, I put them all back and left.
Boom.
And I was like, I'll just read these comics digitally when I get a chance.
And
you know, I'll buy them from... Yeah, I really don't need more unread comics in my apartment.
Right, right.
So DC, you cost yourselves and the publisher of Annihilator sales by not making that Justice League United Canada variant.
I believe that's Legendary's comic.
Legendary, yes. Oh, that's right, because I was like, oh, Legendary, I have their T-shirt.
I'm wearing their T-shirt.
Nice. Dave and I once went to a Legendary party.
Hosted by the Nerdist, I believe.
Yeah, it was when Nerdist got bought by Legendary. And right. Let me tell you, I did not know that had happened for like a year later. I was like, oh, wow. Chris Hardwick's getting like, the guests he's getting is getting much more varied and sometimes like much better. Oh, they got bought by Legendary. Interesting. it's a comfortable T-shirt.
It is. It's a great T-shirt. I love it. I actually just sleep in it now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Here's one of the Future's End issues that's coming out that I'm excited for is Batman and Robin Future's End number one, because it's got that Dustin Nguyen's doing the art, and I love his art. Usually it's pretty cartoony, but he does like serious art well too. But it's got, I forget the character's name, it's like the Damien clone who's kind of evil and kind of like on steroids.
Oh, yeah, yeah, introduced at the end of
The Heretic.
Yes, yes.
Of Batman Inc.
Right.
Yeah, The Heretic. So he's on the cover, and it's interesting to see, because this is 5 years in the future. Is this The Heretic like becoming a pseudo-Batman type character?
Or is this the resurrected Damien becoming a heretic type character?
Ooh, nice little flip side there. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I'm trying.
Yeah,
to think.
I don't. As far as DC goes, I mean, I was not really impressed by, or I was more lost with the JSA. The Earth 2 Future's End book. So I really haven't been... It just turned me off. DC, you just lost any interest I had in this crossover until I kept up on Future's End, which I feel like this is the opposite of what you want, right? Like, I mean...
Yeah, but, I think... That's coming from the DC guy on this podcast. Like, when the lines are drawn, I'm much more Marvel, you're much more DC.
Yeah, I feel like DC, come on. Like, this is where you sell me to go back and read all the issues of Future's End I missed.
Right.
This is what this event seems to be for, I think. I mean, as far as, like, if there's a strategy here, that would be it. And I read it and I said, oh, well, I mean, I'm going to read New 52 Future's End when they come down in price a little bit. But if I did not have that, you know, if I didn't have that with Comixology, pre me having an iPad, my reaction would not, this is what it would have been. Well, I mean, I guess I'll read it in trade. I hope the library gets it. I don't know. This doesn't seem interesting, and I would be out.
Right.
So, I mean, and I've already read a bit of Future's End, and I know that I like it. So that's also a help. But if I didn't at all, I don't know if I would be in one bit.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like there's a new issue of Future's End coming out this week. So is the weekly
there
series
is,
on hold?
There is. It's number 20.
Oh.
There are Constantine's on the cover.
Ah, okay. I totally missed that. Okay. So, I guess it's a weekly series, so it's easy to fall behind on that.
Right. You know, it's not bad to let them pile up and then read them all and then, you know, read a couple more later, you know.
I just let them pile up. Who needs to read them?
Right.
So jumping over to Marvel for a minute, this made me shift in my seat a bit. All-new X-Men number 32, Miles Morales is hanging out with the all-new X-Men team.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that in our way.
Yeah, this is the first time hearing this. And I know he did some dimension hopping after, like, the end of Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's in the 616 universe, although in Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, I believe he's still in his universe.
Is this tying into Spider-Verse, maybe?
Maybe. I have no idea. That's a good question. Because at the end of Age of Ultron, all of time and space got kind of mucked up, and I believe Miles Morales and Rip in Space and Time, that takes him to Marvel 616, you know, the main universe.
Yeah.
But in his own, he's in his own series on the Ultimate Universe, and then he's also in Ultimate. He's in the Ultimates as a teammate of that, and I believe, you know, they're also still in the Ultimates world. So this should be interesting.
Oh, maybe it's how he got from there to his new series or something like that.
Maybe, but it's. You know, one of those classic X-Men, welcome to the X-Men, Miles Morales. Hope you survive the experience covers. And Mahmoud Asar is doing the art, and I love his art. He did the art when Supergirl launched in the New 52.
Right, yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah.
He's a great artist.
Yeah. So, actually,
speaking of Marvel, we didn't talk at all about Original Sin Final Issue.
I was going to say that. I intentionally did not bring it up last week because I had not read it. I bought both 7 and 8 and not read them last week.
Oh, so. You know what? I walked down the hall after, like, closing the computer, and I was like, oh, we didn't talk about Original Sin.
That's funny because I walked down the hall after closing the computer, and I was like, we didn't talk about Original Sin.
Did you like it? Did you like the end?
I did. I thought it was really cool. I was sad. Like, okay, guys, we're going to spoil Original Sin number 8. It's been out for a couple of weeks. If you're not reading, if you haven't read it, you know, fast forward the podcast for a few minutes. I can't believe Nick Fury died.
But did he?
I don't know. I guess that's true. No body, right? It was like
no, at
Captain
the end.
America's son, creamed to a pulp.
Isn't he the new Watcher?
No, Bucky is. The Winter Soldier is. Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Duh, I'm an idiot. Yeah, no, you're right. Nick Fury's a new Watcher. He's, like, in chains, and his limbs have grown a little weirdly, too. He's got, like, big hands now.
It's interesting.
Yeah, and now the Orb is some kind of weird Peeping Tom villain who, like, likes to watch crimes happen.
Yeah, like, I felt like I thought you were going to see him elevate, and I don't feel like he's elevated at all. You know, I thought...
Yeah, I feel like he's still...
Yeah, I felt like he was there as like, oh, maybe he's going to be the new Watcher, which I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, change his character, make him pretty cool. And I mean, he gave him more like interest. He was more interesting, creepy, like, you know. So I thought that was like, it was an okay ending for him. I kind of did wish he was the new Watcher. Not the Washer.
The new Washer.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. The Nick Fury thing, I think it's interesting. You know what? All I thought at that point was, oh, hey, remember when Hal Jordan became the Spectre?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that not because this was like poorly written, nor were any of the Spectre books that Hal Jordan was in, or the crossover that changed him into the Spectre, and it really, you know, it did some interesting things, but I don't know if it suited the character, you know, like, you know, the, you know, Hal Jordan that everybody wanted to see was not someone who was thinking about redemption in mm-hmm. the way where he was, you know, somewhat passive, you know, like, and they turned the Spectre into the spirit of redemption rather than vengeance.
Right.
And it didn't suit either of the characters very well. And when I think of Nick Fury, I don't think of, you know, standing around and watching.
Yeah.
And the one part of it that I do like is that he's in chains and he's forced to watch, you know. Like, it's not his choice as opposed to the original Watcher where he chooses to watch. And so that gives you an extra, like, you know, like an interesting thing there. So I'm just, you know, I'd like to see how this works. You know, I don't know if it will, but I don't know if Marvel is going to launch a Watcher series. So,
no, I doubt it.
You know, like, this might be interesting, played out in backgrounds of other comics. So it might work out just fine.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to get played out in the backgrounds of other comics, you know, maybe become a B story in an upcoming multi-part crossover.
Yeah.
And I guess this does, you know, pave the way for them to just treat Nick Fury Jr. as the Samuel Jackson Nick Fury, not, you know, by taking Nick Fury, the original Nick Fury, out of the picture.
Right. It's and that's, again, we had this conversation before, is that, you know, Bucky the Winter Soldier is now taking the place of, you know, the biggest part of what Nick Fury was that we didn't know about.
Right.
So this is like, you know, you thought Nick Fury's job was hard. No, it's even harder. And this is the guy who's going to pull it off. But let me tell you, it is not the guy that Marvel introduced as the replacement to Nick Fury.
Yeah, well, they need him on the ground, you know, because actually...
Because he's not as good as the original Nick Fury, and that's what it comes down to. Like, I'm not even, like, you know, like a gung-ho Nick Fury fan. I enjoy the character, but I know Way was upset when they, like, brought this new Nick Fury in, or, like, I was like, oh, that's cool. But, like, what they're doing here is just basically saying, hey, this character is not as good as the one before, if you were wondering.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a good point. And I feel like that's the same way people felt in the 90s when DC was going around, you know, introducing new versions of their characters like Kyle Rayner, and then to a lesser extent making Hal Jordan from Parallax into the Spectre.
Right.
Yeah, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is getting its own comic book. I'm sure the new Nick Fury is going to be in there because it's going to have the characters from the TV show. So far, the only characters from the TV show who have been in the comics are Coulson and then Nick Fury and Maria Hill, who originated in the comics. But this will be the first time we get Melinda May and Fitzsimmons and all the rest of them. in a comic book. So, yeah, I guess we'll be seeing, you know, Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury in that. And then Winter Soldier, he's getting a new, you know, he's had a few series over the past couple of years. He had an ongoing that got canceled, then that limited series, and now he's going to be the man on the wall, basically. And that it's going to be him, like, out in space killing aliens and stuff,
which is cool. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like there's only so many spy stories you could probably tell with them that are just, you know, basic spy stories that, you know, will keep people interested. I think that's where I think there's a mine there of spy stories that you could tell, but I feel like this opens it up to be, you know, something more than he was initially when he's brought back as the Winter Soldier for good.
Yeah. I actually, Al Scott is writing it, but I kind of wish Rick Remender was writing this, because he does Winter Soldier really well, and he does outer space fun stuff really well. Like, if you read Fear Agent, or just even a couple of issues of Wolverine and the X-Men that took place at, like, this crazy off-world stuff, you know.
Right.
But I'm definitely interested in reading this series when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, Al Scott is a good writer. I've read...
What else has
I read
written?
A couple of his Suicide Squad books, which he was taken off of quickly.
And that was post New 52 or pre New 52?
Post New 52.
Okay.
Or cool. Post Flashpoint, New 52.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. Post Flashpoint.
Come on, get it right.
I'm the Marvel guy.
Yeah, so I'd definitely be interested in reading it. So what'd you read last week other than catching up on Original Sin?
I've actually just caught up on Original Sin. I opened up my iPad and I was like, I got to read more stuff. I'm like, I'm podcasting early this week. I got to do this. But I just read those two issues of Original Sin, and I've been reading more of that Art of Neil Gaiman book that I talked about a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
The one written by Haley Campbell. It's great. If you're a Neil Gaiman fan, the more I read this, the more I love it. But the funny thing is, it's killing my eyesight, because it has reprints of, like, scripts and comics and like, articles he wrote when he was a journalist. Like, he interviews Alan Moore at one point. He introduced, interviews a bunch of people. But they have those articles reprinted in the book, and they're legible, but they are the tiniest type. Like, it's like reading, like, 5-point type. So I'm just, like, holding the book up to my face and trying to read it. But it's cool. I'm liking it a lot.
Awesome. I'd like to read that book. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm actually really interested in getting to two parts. And it's two parts of Neil Gaiman's career that I'm not the biggest fan of, one being Marvel 1602, because I want to know, like, what his thoughts were with that. And the other being, I forget what comic company put it out. This was, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s. They did a line of, like, So-and-So Presents, and then the title. And it was, like, something that was Neil Gaiman Presents, and it was based on a story that, like, he came up with the story idea, but then somebody else was writing it. And they even did one, like, Gene Roddenberry Presents, and it was from a story idea that Gene Roddenberry had come up with that he didn't do anything with, and then, you know, somebody else wrote it. And I always wondered, I can't even remember the title. Like, I could picture the first issue of the Neil Gaiman book, the cover of it, but I have no idea what it's called. And I really hope that they touch on this in that book, because I really want to know, like, did he just do that to, like, cash in? Because I can't see, like, what the creative endeavor was there. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, it could have been, you know, I wonder who he was working with. Was it, like, pitched as, like, an educational thing? Like, here, you give, like, this idea for a story and see how somebody runs with it. And they could be new creators and you could be giving them, like, you know, a spotlight or something like that. But that, yeah. Like, if I was pitched that way, and like I had a bunch of ideas that were like, ah, this is good. You try it out. See if you can make this better. You know.
Yeah.
So that's probably, I could see that failing in the way that like these are his like second rate ideas. You know, not a knock against Neil Gaiman, but like they're not the ones that he chose to pursue as, you know, big story ideas. And he chucks it the way of maybe a new writer and says, hey, see what you could do with this. And he's Neil Gaiman at that point to that person who is in comics, right? You know, like he wasn't Neil Gaiman to the world maybe then, but he was definitely Neil Gaiman to, you know, comics fans where you're like, oh shit. Neil Gaiman just gave me a story to write that he thought up of, I'm just going to do exactly what he says to do, which is, you know, the opposite of what he wants. But that's how I could see that playing out.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, to read about that. And I do hope they touch on it. I haven't, like, skipped ahead to see if they do or not. But, yeah, so far it's a great book. It's very thick. It's about 350 pages. And like I said, since some parts of it have such tiny print, like, that just adds to the, sort of adds to, you know, the page count. And I highly recommend any fan of Neil Gaiman doing, like, reading this. And I hope that somebody makes a similar book for Grant Morrison. Although I bet some, like, his own Super Gods is kind of like that.
Yeah, yeah, he kind of talks about his ideas behind things, and yeah.
Yeah.
He's fairly open about what he thinks and, you know, all that kind of stuff, so.
Here's a cool, like, one of my favorite books is Good Omens, which was co-written by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
Terry Pratchett, yeah.
And I've loved that book since I was in high school, and I just reading about it now found out that that book came about because Neil Gaiman had written, like, the first 5,000 words, and so not very much, basically just, like, the intro to it, and then abandoned it. And but he had at first sent it out to people to, like, hey, this is what I'm working on now. And then a while later, Terry Pratchett got in touch with him and was like, hey, are you still doing that book about, like, the Antichrist? Because, you know, I'd love to read it. And Neil Gaiman basically said, like, I kind of like abandoned it. So Terry Pratchett offered to buy the idea from him or co-write it with him, and Neil Gaiman was like, co-write, because back then that's when, like, Terry Pratchett was the number. You know, he wasn't, as Neil Gaiman puts it, he wasn't like every one out of three books sold in the UK is a Terry Pratchett book, but he's still like a famous author, and so. You know, that worked out really well for him, and he like learned a lot working with Terry Pratchett on there too.
Yeah, that's I think I read that doesn't sound too surprising. I think the paperback version I got in high school had a little bit of that in an introduction.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, the paperback version I have is like well worn and might need to be taped together soon, but I actually got it signed by Neil Gaiman. He drew a little picture of a book on fire and he wrote, burn this book.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's super cool. He's like, wow, you like this book a lot. And I was like, I've read it a number of times. It clearly showed because it's like falling apart at the seam.
Yeah, the first Neil Gaiman book I read actually was Neverwhere, which I enjoyed.
Oh, I love that
immensely.
I've never watched the show. I've watched the first two episodes of the show.
You don't really need to.
Yeah, I love the book, and I just couldn't get into the show at all.
Yeah, the book was great. And I feel like is the book really, when I was reading Anansi Boys, it reminded me of that book.
Oh, okay.
A lot. Like, just, I don't know what it was, but it just kind of had me recall that a little bit. Wow, yeah, cool. So I finished Lock and Key.
Oh, how did you like that?
Man, that was a great book. The artist is great. You know, the first trade, I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this artist. It's kind of oddly cartoony, kind of. And I was like, well, that's. I'll give it a chance, you know, it'll probably grow on me. You know, not that he was a bad artist technically, but from that first issue to the last issue, like he grows as an artist so much, and by the end he reminds me a little bit of Steve Dillon.
Okay.
The beginning, not at all. Man, it is such a great written book, and the art is great, and it's suspenseful, and like I was having a hard time not flipping ahead. You know, that's how good it was. And by the time I got to the last book, like it was one of those things where like I was like, I need to finish this. I need to know what happens. It reminded me of when I was reading the last book of Harry Potter, like, you know, or any Harry Potter book. I was like, oh God, come on. I gotta get to the end. I gotta know.
Right.
Blood pressure's rising, you know?
That's funny.
It was a great book. I recommend it to anybody. I specifically recommend it to anyone in high school. It just made me feel like I was back in high school. And in like not a bad way, just like, you know, okay, yeah, this is totally high school. This feels a lot like high school. And I felt like if I was in high school reading this book, Dave in high school would have loved this book. even more than Dave does now, you know.
So it sounds like you're giving Lock and Key a recommendation.
Yes. Everybody go read Lock and Key if you have not.
How many books are there in Lock and Key?
There's like 5 or 6.
Okay. So it's not crazy, but...
No, I picked them up in a sale a while back, like a half-off sale.
Okay, cool.
And I just, you know, I just got around to reading them now, so. So, yeah, so then I started reading because I picked up the last few issues of Sweet Tooth that I had not read, so I decided to start that from the beginning. And, man, that is a great series. It's like my third time reading... third or fourth time reading it through, like every time a new trade comes out, I'd start from the beginning. It's so great, and Lemire is so great when he does his own artwork, and I really think, you know, that could be said for anybody who's doing their own art with their own creation and writing at the same time. Usually it's just, I think it's phenomenal. You know, you Frank Miller, you know, you see that with, you know, any creator, I think, is really much better with their own creation.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think, you know, even if you look at Dan Jurgens, I think he is the best when he's with Booster Gold, writing and drawing.
Oh, interesting. I don't know why. I think since my first experience with Dan Jurgens was Superman, I will always associate him with Superman, but I don't think I would buy a Superman comic written and drawn by Dan Jurgens right now. Like I associate him with Superman specifically like 1991 through 1994.
Right. Yeah, he had some, like, he was, we've talked about him being like a serviceable writer, but like there's definitely some Dan Jurgens gems. I would say any of his Toyman issues, like child abuse stuff.
The Brainiac War World issues? I don't remember what it was called, but it was – Brainiac was taking War World
– Panic in the Skies.
Panic in the Sky, yeah, that was great. I think that's one of the best Superman stories ever. I remember you buying it at New York Comic Con a couple of years ago.
Yeah, because I had a couple issues of it, and I was like, I could finally read the whole thing. It was so great, and I didn't even have the whole story.
Yeah, I was obsessed with that, and that was something like I had the individual issues of and read over and over. I'm sure if I found my Panic in the Sky issues, they would be like in maybe fine condition at best.
Yeah. Like that Terry Pratchett.
Exactly. And then in these days, I've just got stacks and stacks of unread comics. So I think that's going to bring it to the close for this week. What do you think?
Yeah, we kind of brought it back to the beginning with some Booster Gold there.
That is true. Yeah, that's true.
Book ended this with some Michael John Carter.
Way to bring it full circle, sir. Yeah, so thank you everybody for joining us this week for the podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. And Dave, always a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Yeah, I hope you have a story-worthy week.
I'm going to read some comics.
I just binged some Moth podcast episodes. So that's how they sign off.
Nice. maybe I'll start every podcast with Ira Glass's "Stay With Us." All right, everybody. This is the end of the episode, so don't stay with us. We'll see you next week.